Digital stance, getting firewalled, ho, cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zip-sits. This is dedicated...
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Binary Revolution Radio. Today is December 9th, Tuesday, December 9th, 2003. I am your usual suspect, Stank Dog, in the house, and with one of our all-time favorite guests, who's actually, you've been doing a lot of radio time lately. Welcome back to the one, the only...
Not Theory. What's up, everybody?
In the house. Now, we're going to talk about your radio antics coming up, because you've been putting in a lot of time lately. But before we do, I have got a lot of housekeeping-type things to take care of this time. Now, we are going to talk a little bit about the big hack later on the show, a little follow-up on that. But probably let's start off with the easy thing first. First of all, I've had one letter's email address since we've had BenRev going, and pretty much it was a generic account, letters@benrev.com, whether you're writing for the magazine, writing in for feedback for the radio show, blah, blah, blah. Well, I finally broke down because I'm getting so much feedback on the radio show, and I want to keep it kind of separate and not get confused with the magazine, and I wanted them to have a unique address, that I created a new radio@benrev.com email address. So if you have feedback for the radio show now, it's no longer letters@benrev.com. It never was stankdog@benrev.com, even though people use that. So now we're going to go to any feedback that you want to have on Binary Revolution Radio, send it to radio@benrev.com. So, that's the first thing. Now, also, just kind of to let people know what's coming up for the rest of the month and through the holidays, we have been on, this is our 23rd straight episode, and I plan on not missing anything through the holidays. I've spoken in the past about how I put together a little telephonic craptacular. That's going to be our Christmas episode, if you want to call it that, which ironically is a pretty big milestone. It's going to be episode 25, which is going to air just right around Christmas or the week of Christmas. And let's see, I don't think that's going to be the last one in December. That might be the last show of the year. I think there's one more after that. So we'll have probably a New Year's show after that. But the milestone, the 25th, what is that, a diamond anniversary, gold, something like that?
I don't know, you got me, man.
Yeah, oh well. Whatever it is, the 25th, we'll have a little, have a fun show and still be able to enjoy the holidays, stuff like that. It will stream, same time, same hack channel, all that good stuff. Won't be the typical show, but there will be some new material that week. So... and speaking of streaming, speaking of Rant Radio recently has split up into three different channels, as you all know by now, and they were concerned with the talk channel. The industrial station and the punk station both are very high, 1, 2, 3, and always top rated within their genre. However, the talk station was not getting a lot of listeners, especially during the day or during late nights. When the shows come on, you know, we have listeners. They were starting to lose a little bit of faith in it, but I actually went out and checked out of curiosity because they had been showing some concern about what could they do about the talk station. I mentioned that BenRev Radio past episodes are going to be aired on there and put into the stream sometime soon. If they're not already, I haven't seen or heard anything yet. But I actually went out and checked on Shoutcast.com during episode 22. I went out there and looked, and Rant Radio Talk broke into the top 5, number 5 to be exact, during BenRev Radio 22. So, Rant Radio Talk is doing fine when the shows are on the air. So what we need is more shows and more content, and maybe... I don't know if the past episodes of BenRev are going to help, or if that's going to draw any interest or not. But the talk channel is doing well when shows are going on. So what I want to do, and even though we've been around for a while, and yeah, we try to spread the word a little bit here and there, I've never really called out and said, "Hey, let's spread the word on Binary Revolution. Let's go out there and get people interested." And I'm going to say, let's really go out there and blow this up. Let's go out there and spread the word. I know some people in the forums have been making some flyers and some bookmarks and stuff like that. Take it out. Go to the bookstores and pin it on the bulletin boards or slip them on the shelves of the magazines or tape it. You know, put it up somewhere. Go to your college campuses and put it up in the bulletin boards and in the classrooms and stuff like that. Let's get people interested. Let's get people listening to the show. Let's get people listening to Rant Radio in general. Check out the magazine. Let's see if we can finally turn this up a notch and see if we can really generate some interest. We're at the point now where, you know, we're holding steady. We have a lot of great regular listeners and regular readers and stuff, but we really, I'm actually going to say, let's try to see what we can do. Let's go out there as a group and try to spread the word and see what we can do, see if we can generate interest, and see if the hacking community really is growing, as I have theorized many times, that there's a kind of a revolution going on, not only hacking, but freaking as well. Let's see if that revolution is actually going to take effect and see if we can help further it, see if we can make it grow. So anybody that has any ideas on that, or if you want, you know, you have my full blessing to go out and put up flyers and stuff like that, take the stuff that people are working on the floor in the forums and go out there and really pimp the show, pimp up Binary Revolution as much as you can. Because the more people that listen and the more people that come check out the magazine and the forums and stuff, it's better for all of us because we can go out and have more dedication and more reason to keep going with it. So I'm off that soapbox. I'm done with that. But I'm very serious about that. So, but I'm going to move on actually to an email now. And an email from Fake Boy. And you can help me out with this one, actually. This is, I had mentioned on a previous show about just being in the mall and saw a bunch of kids with their cell phones calling the pay phones that were in the food court and stuff. And I mentioned, is that just messing around, or is that a form of freaking? Are they young freaks, or, you know, are they just messing around like kids do, or is that actually some interest in the phones? And Fake Boy emailed in saying that he didn't really think it was, or he didn't seem to think it was. He said, quote, and I'm quoting his email, says, "Freaking only exists if you are using the telephone or telephone system for your own personal gain or education." Now, what do you think about that? Is prank calling freaking?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or is it that easy to define? Is freaking just a real vague term that can encompass all of those things?
I think it is really vague, because I think some prank calls would be classified as freaking, but I don't think all of them would. You know, the typical, is your refrigerator running? Yeah, well, you should go catch it, that type of stuff. That's not freaking. But
do you have 10-pound balls?
Yeah, exactly.
That one doesn't count either?
No.
Oh, man, I thought I was a freak.
No, not with that.
Damn it.
You'll get there.
I'll get there.
No, I think if you do something really cool, like the PLA guys have a bunch of freak prank calls, and they, you know, they take over somebody's phone system and they do some stuff. And on one hand, you could say, okay, it's malicious and it's stupid, but on the other hand, it isn't freaking because they know what they're doing with phones, and it is somebody else's expense. So.
Well, I don't have a problem with it if it's for the sake of fun. People have to have a sense of humor. There's nothing wrong with having some fun, as long as it's not, like, for example, I would be completely opposed to calling, you know, I like they do the phone mobbing, they call it.
Yeah.
We were kind of talking about this. I like it when they call in the radio show. There was the one they called in the radio show for some kind of auction, garage sale thing.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. That was, you know, I think that was in the spirit of fun. But I would be so opposed to calling, like, a hospital or something like that, you know. I don't... Not that they've ever done that. I'm not saying they would or have. But, you know, as long as people know the difference between... It's not cool to prank call 911, you know?
Right.
There's a line. So, what about that statement that, you know, using it for your own personal gain or education?
Yeah, your own personal gain, I'm not really sure I'm down with that. That sounds to me like, you know, it sounds to me like stealing. So, if you're using codes or, you know, stealing calling card numbers, and you consider that for your own personal gain, and you think that's freaking, like, that's not really freaking.
Well, he says, or education, and maybe, I don't know, I'll play devil's advocate, because I don't know what he means, so maybe he's inferring your personal gain as far as figuring out how to get around all the charges that the phone companies call you. Your own personal gain by figuring out how to make cheap long-distance calling without getting raped by the phone company's rates and stuff like that. Maybe that's what he means by personal gain.
Maybe, but when I hear personal gain, it always has like that kind of malicious undertone to it. Like, if for education, I could see that. Like, you want to learn how the phone system works? Yeah, that's great. But, you know, you want to steal phone calls? You know, while I don't really side with the phone company, I don't feel bad for them because they rip everybody off. But, you know, stealing phone calls is not freaking. I'll say that.
Well, what if we were to change it then, relating to what we just said about the prank calls, what if we said for your own education or entertainment?
Yeah, I think...
Would entertainment qualify?
I think that's probably more accurate.
Yeah?
Yeah, as long as
I can agree with that. Yeah, I think I agree with that.
But on the other hand, if you are messing around with the phone and you find some way to steal phone calls, you know, I guess you could consider that freaking too. I mean, it all is freaking. If you're learning about the phone system, it's freaking. But if you're doing it just for the purpose of stealing phone calls, I wouldn't call that freaking anymore.
Well, you know, it comes back to, and I know everybody hates this topic, but we'll touch on it. It comes back to the whole black hat, white hat thing. Just because somebody writes a virus or some malicious code, it can still be considered hacking. It may not be the kind of hacking we like or support, but I still define it as hacking.
Oh, of course.
You know, so maybe the same thing with freaks. People that use it trying to figure out how to make a free call or rip off the phone company or whatever for their own personal gain, I guess it could fall into that freak category. I don't want to go into the whole white hat freak and black hat freak. I think that's, you know, it goes without saying. But, yeah, it's a pretty vague term, just like hacking.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, like I said, if you're messing around with the phone system and you figure out some way to make free calls, that's cool. But if you spend all of your time just trying to make free calls, I don't know. That's not as cool to me. Like, getting the phone system to do something cool and getting free calls along the way, that's one thing. But just doing it for free calls is kind of stupid. Especially when everybody has, like, unlimited long distance and unlimited nights and weekends anyway. Like, what types of calls are you getting for free?
Well, yeah, true. The phone environment has changed a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've talked about voice over IP, and some of the services that are available to people now. But, all right, I think that's enough. I think we got the point across. I think it does have that connotation to say personal gain, but I hope he didn't mean that to sound the way it sounded.
I'm just saying, that's the way it sounds to me. If that's not what he meant, then that's fine, but that's the way it sounds to me.
Well, I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt and say that that's not what he didn't mean it that way.
Fair enough.
Regardless, that's it for the mailbag. That's it for all the housekeeping. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, but we are through that part of the show. And, hey, did you by chance make it to 2600 meeting?
No. What was I doing? I have no idea what I was doing.
I went to mine again this week. We had a pretty decent turnout. We didn't have any official, like, formal presentations, which actually I don't want real formality. I don't want to go to another meeting. I have enough of those as it is, which I've talked about ad infinitum in the past, ad nauseum. But we did have a discussion on DNS servers and their roles and what they do and how they work and stuff like that. That was pretty interesting. And even went so far as to discuss, or at least mention and touch on man-in-the-middle attacks and how they can be dangerous and how and why they work the way that they do. So that was pretty, you know, it was a pretty interesting topic. A lot of people already knew some of it. A lot of them didn't know any of it. So it was a good topic that mixed, you know, some of the more experienced people with some of the less experienced, you know, all in one good topic. So it was a pretty good meeting for me. I also finally finished my Hacking 101 article for this Binary Revolution Magazine 1.3. I finally finished that, and it's I'm really proud of it, actually. I guess I can give out the topic. It's a much more in-depth version of directory transversal. And how it works, why it works, and this time into some more detail and specifics on the fundamentals upon which it's based. So this is actually might be longer than any of the other hacking 101s that I've written. It built on the first one that I wrote for Outbreak Magazine a while back. I kind of started with that and then added a lot more to it. So that will be in 1.3. And oh, and I finally, not only that article, speaking of articles, I put finally a bunch, if not all, by the time you listen to this, I have put the majority of all the old articles finally up on stankdog.com. Some of them are actually updated, like the 2600 Secrets article that Nick 84 and I wrote. I updated that one, so it is up to the current issue, and I uploaded that to the site, and I'll try to keep on top of stuff like that and the hacking movies and stuff like that. And I've been uploading them, and more will be coming soon. Go to stankdog.com, and there's a button at the top that says My Downloads, and you can go there. They're organized. There's also a post on stankdog.com that explains how I broke down the directory structure, if you can't figure it out on your own, of course. Just be careful that some of the articles I write are completely in ASCII format. So the way I broke it down is in the main directory is like the document.doc files, PDF files, Excel files, etc., etc. But I also put up an ASCII text version. I made an ASCII folder inside of that. Some of my articles are only in ASCII text, so you have to make sure you check that folder because some stuff only exists back there while others are duplicates. So if you only look in that first directory, you may miss some of the ASCII-only articles. And that's about it for me. Now, as I said way at the beginning of the show, actually it wasn't that long ago, but at the beginning of the show that you've been doing a lot of getting a lot of airtime lately on Default Radio. So actually I thought maybe you could follow up with us right now. How is that roof trampoline thing coming along?
Oh my God. Let me I was really, really tired when we made that show.
That was hilarious. I had to stop and just laugh until I couldn't even listen. I was laughing so hard at that.
Oh man. Yeah, we were just, me and Dakota were just, you know, chatting on the phone, whatever, and you know, Lucky was nowhere to be found, and I was exhausted, and he's like, fuck it, let's record the show. So, whatever, I don't know, when I get tired, crap like that comes out, and I don't know. But we have made some improvements on the roof trampoline, actually.
Ooh!
Dakota mentioned that there'd be a real pain in the ass to get the trampoline up to the roof, so I invented the trampoline, so you can just bounce the trampoline onto the roof, and there you go. Then you can have kids jump off the roof all day long.
And bounce back up?
Oh, yeah. So now I got two patents in the works. The trampoline and the roof trampoline.
You know, believe it or not, I actually had a trampoline when I was a kid. Like a full Olympic size. My dad bought it from the YMCA.
Nice.
They got a new one, and they didn't need the old one, so my pops bought it. And we had it in our backyard, and I loved that. That was so much fun. And I don't know. I kind of feel like you did. I'd hate if I tell this story and somebody goes out and does it.
Oh, man.
I'd feel, but, what the hell. First of all, I used to just do all kinds. I'd be on that trampoline for hours at a time. It was so fun. Well, one day we got the bright idea. This was when I lived in Alabama, I think. Yeah, it was Alabama. Our backyard was kind of on a hill, and we had a pool at the bottom of the hill.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so we got this bright idea to, and there was kind of a ledge carved into the side of the hill where the pool was. So we put the trampoline on the edge of that, of the ledge, of the edge of the hill there,
uh-huh.
And used it to dive into the pool.
Nice.
Oh, it was sweet. It was cool. Until.
Still, of course.
So you knew that was coming, right? Until.
I knew. As soon as you said pool, trampoline, I knew that there was a problem.
Well, like most pools, it had concrete around the edge of the pool. It could have been much worse. It's not as bad as you might think. I'm getting ready to go there. One of the dumbass, uncoordinated neighbor kids didn't make the jump all the way.
Ugh.
Now, he's very lucky, really, in retrospect. I mean, we were like, I don't know, 13, 14, 15, I don't know. We were jackasses before Jackass became famous.
Nice.
But he just didn't make it far enough. Trampoline was wet. I don't know what the excuse was, but he just barely cleared the pool, but his shin dragged the edge of the pool as he went in and basically ripped a whole shard of skin off the front of his leg.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, that was the end of the pool trampoline. That was the end of that. He was fine. I mean, he put a bandage on, and there was nothing... There was no stitches, there was no harm, but it was just like one of those, oh, shit. You know?
Yeah, and you know what the nice thing is, though? Back in the day, like, back then, his parents didn't come back and sue you guys, did they?
No, that was a... It doesn't seem like that long ago, but in terms of our judicial system, it was eons ago.
Actually, you know, the funny thing about that is that I've done some reading about, you know, lawsuits and stuff like that, and from what I can tell, when they first came out with the notion of a lawsuit and suing for stuff, people sued for the most ridiculous things ever, like more so than they do now. So there was this first initial, like, peak of ridiculous lawsuits, and then it kind of calmed down, and now it's coming back. So do some homework on it. You'll see. Just look up ridiculous lawsuits, and I'm sure on Google you'll find
out. Oh, I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know what sparked it all, the second wave of them, is that lady in the damn coffee at McDonald's.
Oh, God.
She's the one that spurred the whole second wave of them. People realized, wow, McDonald's has deep pockets, and you can sue them and get money for nothing.
Yep.
So people realize that, and it's just,
It's the death of both common sense and personal responsibility.
Especially personal responsibility. I'm glad you said that's the more important thing to me. Common sense died before we were born.
Yeah.
Common sense has been long gone in this country. Long gone. Our forefathers were the last sign of that. Scraped his leg up and put a bandage on it, rode his bike home. That was end of story. Nothing, you know. I mean, he could have hit, even if it was just an inch, if he would have actually got hit the top of his knee, that could have been devastating.
Yeah.
You know, let alone if he would have took a header off the concrete or something.
Yeah, it'd be no fun.
Yeah, and other than that, the worst things on the trampoline is, of course, you would occasionally, you'd lose control and go flying off or something. We used to put it underneath a tree and then climb up in the tree and jump down. And you'd just be so out of control, all that gravity pulling all your weight down, you go flying off and hit the side of the garage or something. But, you know, harmless. So, let's combine that. And instead of the kid scraping his leg on the way to the pool, he's scraping his leg on the way down of a 20-story drop.
Oh, yeah.
That could get ugly.
All thanks to my patent.
There you go.
And I have to thank Decoder, too. Decoder definitely helped inspire that.
That's right. You got to share that reliability. I mean, invention.
Exactly. So, I don't know. Maybe next year it'll be out. Lots of kids will get hurt.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
But no, the show itself was... so far, the default that I've listened to were just hilarious. You know, that's what I really like about Default Radio, and I've said that about Decoder before, too. We'll chat an instant message at work, and he'll just make me laugh in the middle of the day when I'm really bummed out about having to go to another meeting somewhere. So he's got a pretty good patent himself. He's going to open up a consulting company to meet with people on how to have good meetings.
Nice.
So, yeah, oh, that man, that's a winner, man. That's
brilliant.
All him, dude.
Yeah, man.
And people would do it, too. They'd probably pay for it. It'd probably work.
Yeah, I'd believe it.
So, yeah, he makes me laugh with that. And the show itself, he's so funny. It makes me laugh every time. Yeah, did you have fun doing Default Radio?
Oh, yeah. Doing that show was awesome. We did another show, Episode 3. I was on that also. And we had a lot of fun doing that, too. It basically starts out as just a regular phone call. And then as soon as it gets really ridiculous, then we start recording. So.
And that's like a two-hour episode, right?
Yeah, episode 3 is 2 hours long, and it's got 6 people on it, maybe. It's pretty crazy, and there's some cool stuff in there. There's a lot of good technical information, thanks to Royal and Rigel 5 and all those guys. So it's definitely something to listen to.
Yeah, definitely a cool show, and hopefully, I have a little bit of inside information that it's a pretty good sign that it's going to be streaming on Rant Radio soon.
I've heard the same thing.
So, we'll see how that works out. But in the meantime, of course, you can go to CB Zone and check it out there. What else you've been... it's been a long time since you've been on the show. You've been doing all kinds of stuff lately. You were telling me about... Since we talked about Default, let's talk about... You were telling me something about Nextel.
Yeah. Okay. I guess this deserves a little background information. I'm really a nut about GPS. I love GPS units. I love, you know, the whole technology and everything like that. It's awesome. So I signed up with the Sprint PCS probably 5 years ago, right, before they had GPS phones or anything. Then all of a sudden they had GPS phones. I ran out and I bought one. And I signed up for the developer forums, and I was like, yes, I'm going to get to use the GPS in my phone. Sure enough, they said, oh, it's coming out next quarter. It's coming out next quarter. And they kept doing this and doing this. This was in 2000, and they're still doing it to this day. If you go on the developer forums now and you look under the location-based services forum, you'll see it says the moderator's name is Hung, and he says, oh, it'll be out next quarter. It'll be out next quarter. And you know what? In my mind, it's never going to happen. And the inside rumor that I've heard is that Sprint doesn't want you to use the GPS on their phone. They want to charge you for every time you query the GPS. So...
No.
That's the rumor. That's the rumor.
No. That's not going to fly.
Well, that's what I said. But you know what? They should just release support for it. Honestly, I was thinking what I could do is I could go in there and I could try to hack out a way to get the GPS out of the phone. But... That's quite an involved project, so I kind of put that on the side.
Yeah, let the developers do that.
Yeah. You know what? But if I did that, that would be a great way for me to, you know, give the finger to Sprint and say, listen, we're going to use this thing. You built it into the phones. You're charging us. You know, when we buy these phones, we're paying for the GPS unit in it, and we should be able to use it.
Yeah, don't do them any favor. They'll just take it from you and...
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But, so finally I was looking around, and everyone kept telling me, oh, yeah, Nextel, they got GPSs that you can use. I did a little bit of homework, and sure enough, I saw one person wrote a GPS application. And I waited and waited, because I thought Nextel was the worst type of phone ever. I see people walking around and hear that little chirp, and they're yelling back and forth to each other, and I hated it.
Yeah.
But finally, Motorola came out with a phone, the i730. And it supports the latest Java profile, which is the Midlet Profile 2.0, which gives sound support. You know, it lets you do all the cool stuff that the original Midlet Profile should have done, but didn't. So now you can write, like, cross-provider, like Nextel, Sprint, applications that make use of the sound, make use of the graphics functions. They've even got a 3D library for it and all that stuff. So it's got that, and it's got a GPS that you can use. And it's not just you can use it from a Java applet, but you can actually hook it up to your computer, and you can get GPS data streamed straight to your computer like it was a real GPS.
Now that would be sweet.
Yeah, so...
Because GPS units are...
Phone, and there's... They don't make any bones about it. They don't say, oh, you need to pay for it, or, oh, you know, you need to download this software. The phone comes with three applications on it already to use the GPS. And there's just a menu that you go to, GPS, and you say output to serial port, and that's it. It goes right to your laptop. There's no configuration, nothing. It's the most brain-dead easy thing ever. And this is the way it should be on every phone. There's no reason that anybody should build hardware into their phone and hide it from you. You know, what's the point?
Yeah, that's very, very cool because... GPS units are expensive.
Yeah, really.
I mean,
expensive.
Even the cheapest ones are expensive, and to have it, that.
Yeah, I mean, if you go out and you buy a GPS unit, let's say I think the cheapest one I know of is the Garmin eTrex, and I think the cheapest eTrex model is probably like $80 or $90. That's my best guess. Now you can go out and you can buy a Nextel that has a GPS in it that supports Java, and you know works as a regular cell phone and does the little direct connect and all that other stuff. You can get one of those for probably $30 with a one-year contract. So, you know, get a phone and a GPS, or just get the GPS. And the great thing about the phone is, if you want to upgrade it and get new capabilities for your GPS, you just download a new program, and that's it. So, you know, if somebody comes up with a new GPS application, just go ahead and use it. You don't have to worry about upgrading your old GPS and all that other junk. So,
And this is from who again?
Nextel.
Nextel.
So the only problem I have with Nextel is that with Sprint, if I want to download and install an application, I can just point my phone to my website and it downloads the application for me. For some reason, and I might be missing how to do it, but on Nextel I tried to do that and it said it couldn't recognize the file type. And apparently you have to sign up on Nextel's webpage and then have it message the application to your phone. It's a strange setup, and I'm not sure why it's like that. But if I can fix that problem, then it's the greatest thing ever. The next test is just how good their service is over the next couple of months, and then I'm completely sold.
Oh, yeah, definitely keep us informed on that.
Yeah.
Because my contract, I'm happy with T-Mobile. They're okay. However, I purposely signed a short contract I went with them, A, to try them out, and B, because at the time they were one of the few that offered internet access and text messaging for a reasonable price.
Right.
So that's going to be up in, I think, I want to say 3 or 4 more months. So by then you'll have a better grasp on what you think of Nextel, and maybe it'll be time for me to switch.
Oh, Nextel also has one more feature that I think is great. It's called ALS, which stands for Alternative Line Service. Let's say I went out and got a Nextel and I got a new phone number. I still have my Sprint phone with my old phone number on it. In a month when my contract runs out, if I think Nextel's really that good, I'm going to transfer my Sprint phone number to my Nextel account, but I'm going to keep both numbers. I'm going to have 2 phone numbers on one Nextel phone. So I'm going to have one for, you know, one for work and one for personal use. And the great thing is you can set it up to ring differently for each one, or you can turn off the ringer for one, and you can make calls on one line and not on the other. So if you want to keep your work and your personal phone bill separate, you can do it on one phone, but you still get separate billing for it. It's a pretty cool setup.
Yeah, that sounds like it might get confusing. It sounds like it could be cool in some ways, but messy in others, you know?
Yeah, well, it's nice because you get one bill, but then you get, like, itemized for each phone line. It sounds a little bit weird at first, but now that I've read through the documentation of it, it's really, really simple.
And actually, you said something else earlier that was interesting. You mentioned about support for the universal libraries for sound and video and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something, correct me if I'm wrong, that you could incorporate and possibly have incorporated, hint, hint,
mm-hmm,
into the DDP Freak Toys.
Quite possibly. Now, the only problem is that it's only an application that uses these libraries is only going to work on a phone that supports that new midlet profile. But if anybody's got an i730 or something like that, once the next version of Freak Toys comes out, it's going to have support for some interesting stuff.
Very cool.
I don't know what else to say about it, but I guess maybe in another 2 months, once I've worked out all the library features, I'll release a new version and see what's up.
Sounds very cool. I think we got a little bit of static there on the line or something.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what that was all about.
Hmm.
I've been having weird problems with this phone all night. So.
Yeah, you're starting to fade out a little bit, too. I don't know if the battery's going low there on you or what.
I don't know, man. I'm having bad luck with phones this week.
Since we're also talking about GPS... You also mentioned, I had mentioned on the show in the past, too, something that sounded interesting that I would like to get involved with. I don't have a GPS unit to do this, but you said you have actually had some experience with geocaching?
Yeah, I found the website a long time ago. You know, I got a GPS to play around with at first, and then I started looking online and seeing if there's anything, you know, anything cool that people had come up to do with it. And then I found geocaching.com. And basically, they give you coordinates, they give you a description of an area, and sometimes a couple of hints. And you plug the coordinates into your GPS, you drive, you know, as close as you can, then you get out and walk to wherever the location is, and you have to find some type of, like, it's usually like a little plastic box or something like that, just something that somebody hides out in the middle of nowhere,
mm-hmm,
with GPS coordinates attached to it. So you go out and you find these things, and you open them up. There's usually, I brought a couple people along, and they always like, oh, man, it's going to be the coolest thing. We're going to find gold, or we're going to find, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars lying around. No. It's not like that.
Well, who's going to put out hundreds of... This is put out by other geocachers, right?
It's put out by other people. But
yeah, so who's going to put out millions of dollars?
And that's, you know, I try to explain it to some people, but they've got this whole buried treasure thing stuck in their head, so...
Well, it probably feels like a treasure hunt. Well, I mean, it is a treasure hunt, but it feels probably... more immersive. You really get that spirit of adventure from it, I bet.
Especially if it's a really good location, like you end up going through the woods and stuff like that. I don't know. You can really get into it. It's pretty cool. But usually you'll go there, you'll find like a little Tupperware container or a little plastic box or something like that.
And what kind of stuff have you personally found?
I found, usually there's a notebook. People, you know, sign their name on the notebook, put a date and like a little comment or something like that. Almost always a notebook in it. Then people usually put little toys. Some people put, like, a couple of dollars. Some people will say, you know, if you find it, take a dollar. There's been a couple that I've seen that people take, you know, they take watches or something that they had, and they say, you know, this is my new geocache. The first one to find it can take, you know, whatever type of watch I left in there. People leave disposable cameras so you can take a picture of yourself.
I like that idea.
Yeah, you take a picture of yourself and you put it back in, and then once the person sees that enough people have been to the cache to fill up the camera, they go back, they develop the pictures, they scan them, and then they put them on some website somewhere, or they email them to, you know, the people if they want them.
Do you go online to the site after you found it so they know how many people have been there? Is that part of the rules of the game? Or
not really a rule. I mean, you can do it if you want to. Most people choose to. So you basically go on, you register for a name. You don't have to register for a name if you don't want to, but you can register for a name, search by zip code, and it'll give you all the caches in your area. You go, download, print up the paperwork, find it, then come back, log back in, and you can leave a comment about it. So.
All right, you know what? I'm going to say this on the radio. We're going to do this. When we go to H2K4... we're going to go bury a geocache somewhere down in the subway tunnels or some weird place.
Oh, man.
Do you think it would last?
Well, the problem with the subway is you're not going to get any GPS service there.
Oh, yeah, good point.
What you'd have to do, people do put caches in the subway. I know this. What they usually do, though, is they'll usually give you a coordinate, and then they'll have an encoded message, and they'll say, they'll have the coordinate for, like, the top of, like, the stairway down to the subway. And then when you get there, you take the hint, and the hint says, okay, go downstairs, and it's near this thing or it's near that thing. People do put caches in places where you don't get GPS service. You know, there's too much tree coverage or it's underground or something like that. But you have to give, you know, a very good hint as to where it is. So, but we could definitely hide something in either New York City or, you know, Long Island or Westchester County or something like someplace near New York City when you're...
We will make it a goal. You and I and anybody else who wants to go, we'll make it a goal. We'll start a new one. And we'll see if we can find one or two that are already out there.
All right.
Sound good?
Yeah, man. Hopefully,
by then I'll have a... Well, you've got one anyway if I haven't gotten one. See, the one I'm looking at is for the car. And, you know, before we go into that whole thing, because let's save that for another show.
Fair enough.
Because GPS could get... We can make a whole show on that. So, let's stop there before we completely go off on a whole different tangent.
Nope.
Let's rein it back in.
All right.
It really sounds interesting. I know I mentioned one of our listeners was going to burn a couple copies of Ben Rev Radio to CD and put in a geocache. So that could be cool. Maybe we'll take some copies of the magazine and put in there.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
You know, something like that. So we can contribute. It's not about taking. It's also about contributing. So, you know, we'll do something like that when we go to H2K4. Which is it? Has it ever been given a different name or nickname, or is it still?
I don't know. Most people I hear when they talk about it, they just call it the Hope Conference. I haven't heard anything more than that.
Yeah, they made it a point to say we're just calling it H2K4 right now until we come up with a better name, but I still haven't heard that new name, and it still doesn't have a site dedicated to it yet, I don't think.
No, I'm looking at the website now, and it just says, yeah, they just say the next Hope Conference will take place from July 9th to July 11th.
Right. So, yeah, that's going to be a good weekend, a good week. I might take a nice long vacation, like I was telling you off the air, and take a nice tour of New York City.
The DDP Drinking Tour 2004.
That's right, baby. Scores, here we come.
Oh, Jesus.
Going to take me to every nasty back alley strip bar.
Whoa. Be careful. You don't want to go to some of them.
Yeah, you probably... we're definitely going to avoid the Blue Oyster.
Okay.
Stay away from that one.
Yeah, I'm sure if you really want to look for dirty-ass strip clubs, we can find you some.
Well, maybe it's better we stay with the cleaner ones. It's probably better we stay away from them altogether, but, you know.
Yeah, we might want to get off this topic now before I say something really stupid. So what's next on the
list? Dude, come on. I say something stupid every show, you know, from when the show starts to when it ends, so...
Well, if you really want to, I know of a strip club in the Bronx that has metal detectors in it. So if you want to go to a ghetto one, that's the one.
Ooh, man, check your gat at the door. Wait a minute, who takes... Never mind.
Don't even ask.
Yeah, who takes... Who goes... Never mind.
It's the Bronx.
Okay, whatever. You're right. Let's leave that alone. All right. Well, yeah, that's enough. We've got I'm not going to go. Last episode, our big topic was the big hack, or the big con, whatever you want to call it. And I basically brought out a lot of information about what the big hack is and what the big hack is not. Mm-hmm. And did you listen to that episode yet?
Yes, I got to listen to it.
Okay. I thought it was pretty clear. I really thought that I even read literal quotes from the site, so I thought it was pretty clear, and I'm not going to go back into it a lot on this episode, but I just did want to remind people that the big hack is interactive fiction.
So you say.
Oh, don't go there. See, now how is that a defense, so I say? Well, so does the owner. So does the site itself saying its disclaimer.
It's a mind game, dude.
Yeah, I know. It will hacksaw your mind.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you know, and you know what? Actually, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to say, yes, it will hacksaw your mind. I'm going to agree with that. That is
or another, it will.
It, exactly. In some ways more than others. But, at the same time, keep in mind that it's interactive fiction. To prove that, they've already announced some of their other upcoming projects. It's not just the big hack. You can go to hackback.org, which is the company that's running this, or company or group or whatever you want to call it, and they've already announced some of their upcoming projects. So the next one is called Deity Free, and it's some kind of atheist. What if there were no God? What if there were no religion? What if there were no gods or deities or powers and stuff like that? It's another piece of interactive fiction. And there's another one after that. I forgot the name of it offhand. But the same person. You're saying that it's... people still think it's real. And they're still defending it. Even like you said as a joke that it's a big mind game and, oh no, it may look fake, but that site's just a parody site. No, it's not a parody. If you look closely, you'll see that all of the sites that we've mentioned are registered and owned by the same person.
Uh-oh.
I mean, is he doing a parody of his own site?
Maybe it's fake registrant information on one of the domains.
Somebody copied someone else's registration information?
Yeah, why not?
Wow, see?
Although I have to say, the phone number is fake. The guy's phone number on the site is 555-1411.
Well, 555, of course.
Uh-oh.
Hmm.
It's getting deep.
It's deep. It will hacksaw your mind.
Man, I'm knee-deep in the bullshit.
I'm quoting Decoder there.
Yep.
Actually, it was hacksaw your mind. Anyway, hey, you can double talk it all you want, spin it, whatever you. It's fake. Some people are in denial. I don't know what else to say about it. Except, hey, that's all on you, man. It's all on you. Whatever floats your boat.
They are, I have to say, though, they are hosted by the same company. Hackback.org was registered first. It was registered in 2002 sometime. And the registrant information is exactly the same for both. Whatever. Somebody will say that, whoever registered hackback.org just copied the information, even though they registered first. Or maybe the bighack.org copied hackback to just confuse everybody even more. But you know what? I don't even know if I care anymore.
Well, and you know what? Let's go back to you and I talked off the air a couple times about the big hack when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but so if I say something incorrect, my memory may be fuzzy, but I thought we agreed back then that fundamentally this thing was flawed from the get-go. The whole idea of what the big hack is as far as the using a one-time pad, temporary encryption, putting the files together, just the whole concept of it, would never actually stand up in court.
Right.
Did you, or do you still agree with that?
I still do agree with that, because the premise of the big hack that I saw was that you can't copyright a number, and that everything can be reduced to a number. You know something? That's, in some sense, you could say, oh, okay, you know, that makes a lot of sense. But for you to go to a judge and say, oh, well, everything of copyright law is just crap because you can't copyright a number, that doesn't really work.
Yeah, and I said it as a joke. It's kind of a neat, you know, sitting there drinking beer with the guys, wouldn't this be cool? You know, sounds like a good idea. And even so far as to say, well, what if one person's numbers overlap with someone else's numbers? You know, they kind of use that example.
Right.
You know, that's true of anything on the planet Earth.
Right.
I am made up of numbers. Math is the central point of everything that exists. I could say Starry Night, Van Gogh, Salvador Dali. I can take The Scream. I can take... God, any famous painting, take just the Mona Lisa. It is broken down to numbers, paint, colors of so much percent RGB, so much percent of the primary colors mix a certain way. Using that same theory, you can't copyright the Mona Lisa, you can't copyright a piece of art.
Right, exactly.
Because it breaks down, technically, to spots of ink with a mixture, a percentage, a number, definition of how many shades of what color go where.
Right.
And that's exactly what an MP3, which is fundamentally what the OMP system is, breaking it down and what number goes where, and it just happens to create something. Well, guess what? The whole world just happens to be created and built from the ground up. Based on science and mathematics, and that's not that's just a law of nature. It's not a copyright law.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's like they're taking the whole concept and breaking it down to such a point where it's not even this, they're not even talking about the same thing anymore. I mean, if they wanted to break it down like that, why wouldn't they just say, oh, everything's made up of numbers, and you know, everything's made up of zeros and ones, because with binary you can represent any number you want. You know, you could just say that right off the bat. You don't even need to talk about it anymore. But that's breaking down the problem too far to where it doesn't even make sense anymore.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe let's say this. Maybe we've got it all wrong.
Maybe. But I don't know. I tend to doubt that.
I'm going to leave it like that. Maybe I'm way off.
I don't know.
Maybe not, but maybe I'm way off.
The other problem I had with it was they were talking about all these one-time pads and stuff like that, and trying to say that because we're passing around two numbers that aren't this original number, like they're passing around two files that when combined become the MP3. They say, oh, we're not passing around MP3s, we're just passing around these two files. Well, you know, you bring that into court, and what the judge is going to see is that you're trying to cover your tracks, and they're going to consider it encryption, because essentially it is. It's a one-time pad.
Right. That's absolutely what a one-time pad is, temporary encryption.
Yeah, so when you say, when you bring that up to the judge, you're going to have a hard time explaining why you happen to have these two files that just, for some reason, you know, combine together to create this 8-megabyte file which matches, you know, this copyright owner's material. You know, maybe if it was a 10-byte file, you could say, oh, well, you know, there's a coincidence there, but 8 megabytes? I don't think so.
And I even mentioned before too, if you're going for the simple offset idea, the simple fact that you've offset it and made it differently than what it intended,
right?
You don't even need, if that's the logic of it anyway, you don't even really need a one-time pad or deep encryption. Just add one more bit, and you've changed it.
Yeah, make it like a big Caesar cipher, just everything plus one.
Yeah, you don't even have to make it so complex with all the one-time pad, blah, blah, blah. If that's the theory and the logic behind it, simply make a player, develop a player, that takes in an MP2.5, MP2.999,
right.
Add one bit to it to create an MP3 on the fly, which is what they are proposing,
right?
And accomplish the same thing with that logic. And that also would not stand up in court.
Yep.
Or so we think.
Yeah, or so we think. You know what? When they go to court and the judge says, you know what, you guys are totally right, then I'll buy it. But that would throw the whole world of copyright on its ass. And
they would turn the entire copy. And that's, you know what? That's what they're trying to do. Maybe, and I'm gonna go back and end it with this again. Maybe we've got it all wrong. Maybe they've got it all right, we've got it all wrong, and it's all real, and it's all going to stand up in court, and they've got the talent and the skill set to do it. All the things that we think are wrong, they've got it right. Maybe they're on the right track, and we blew it. But you know what? I'm cool with that. I'll take my chances.
Fair enough.
All right, we are running low on time. However, I do want to touch this one more topic. Have you found or heard of any information about the new Power over Ethernet protocols?
I've seen equipment, I think, from D-Link before that supplies Power over Ethernet to certain devices, and I think Axid. I think it's Axid or Axis, one of the two. They're a company that makes security cameras that are, they have Ethernet jacks in the back, so you can, it's got
right,
a web server.
Yeah, that's. Oh, what is that company? I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't think of the name of it either.
Yeah, I think it's Axis. No, I think it's Axis. It's one of the, something like that. Something along those lines.
I think it's AXXIS. Possibly.
I don't know. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I can't either. We'll look it up and put it in the show notes later. I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think they have a camera that takes Power over Ethernet, which is really, really nice, because running Power and Ethernet to a distant location is a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, well, liked it the first time when it was called USB. But actually, this is not. This is, to be specific, first of all, this is 802.3AF.
Right.
It is PoE, Power over Ethernet. And it basically carries power. Now, I don't have statistics of how much. You were theorizing earlier how much power.
Yeah, I wanted to say, and this may be a little too high, but I wanted to say that it could supply 30 watts, which is a decent amount of power. It may not sound like it, but it really is.
And yeah, as long as it has enough power, I mean, the whole point is to send power to power a device like a camera,
right,
or a wireless access point. Or a router, hub, anything. A router may not happen, but, a simple hub, any number of devices. As long as there's enough power to power that device, yet you still have the distance of the Cat5 media.
Right, opposed to USB, where you have very limited power and very limited distance.
Exactly. So this is going to be a big deal. I really think it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be a huge earth-shattering thing, but this is going to be very handy.
Well,
it's actually using... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's been out for a while, but nobody really has any equipment that supports it yet, and these network cameras are one of the first things that I've seen that make use of it.
Well, see, I think they just made it official. I think they finally just approved a finalized version of the 802.3AF. It's been going all along, and the equipment that was out will probably be compatible. It might need some BIOS upgrade or some firmware upgrade, something like that. But I think now that it's final, then there's going to be a lot more stuff rolling out. Yeah, it's definitely not new. It's been in process, but it's using... I know this. I know it uses... In Cat5, there are some spare wires that aren't used, specifically 4, 5, 7, and 8, that they can put a small amount of power through each one of those. And not only those... But it can piggyback on other wire pairs, and the extra what I found even more interesting about it is that it's not. See, when you send power through a wire, you worry about where it's going to end up.
Right.
You don't want to send that something on the other end that's going to not accept the power and freak out and blow up or something or catch on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the power this on these things is so small individually that if you were to send this to an old legacy device, it would basically bounce back. It would just ignore it. It wouldn't cause any damage. If it's not set up to accept it, it's not really going to be a big deal. It's not going to really be any harm. So that's kind of cool. But if you think about this, when you're setting, and even people who've set it up at their house have run into this problem, you want to set up, for example, a wireless access point. And that's why those are the two perfect things, wireless cameras, or just cameras, and access points. Those are the two best things for it, because let's say you wanted to set up a surveillance camera at your front door of your house, see who's coming in, or even at the back door of your house. You would have to plug the camera in to get power to it. And there's not always power outlets on the outside of your house. You don't have an AC outlet in a lot of these places. And when you're setting up an access point or internet connection, networking equipment, you have to place it near an AC adapter or somewhere where you can jack in to get power.
Right.
So that limits you. So you may find yourself having to buy a couple extra WAPs to fill in gaps in the corners of buildings, for example, and stuff like that, because you don't have power in the corners of those buildings, or you don't, you know, you have to buy an extra one just to cover something because you can't reach certain parts of the building for reasons of not having power. Now, with this power over Ethernet, you can do that. You can put one in the farthest corner of the building in the stairwell where there's no power outlet or something silly like that, and now have coverage through that corner. So you can save money on not having to buy as many devices. And that's why a lot of corporate places, a lot of businesses are going to like this and stuff like that. Like we said, cameras, WAPs. Now, the reason this is important to us, the reason this is important to us as hackers, what makes this interesting is exactly what I said. Putting a wireless access point in the corner of the building, guess what? That's going to stretch further into the parking lot, or into the road, or into the alley, or wherever you want to be. War driving just became even easier than it already, like it needed to be easier.
Yeah.
They just made it that much easier. They have created, and this is a dream that a lot of hackers and non-hackers alike have had, in this theoretical project that people want and would like to have, a canopy is the term. A wireless internet canopy where so many people have wireless that the zones, the radius of that wireless outreach, overlaps with everyone else's so much so that you develop a canopy. Now, I've heard tell, I don't know if this is true, maybe you can back me up on this, I've heard that you can go down Manhattan or down places in New York and have a constant, nonstop access to the internet because there's a canopy enveloping the whole city from all the different buildings being on top of each other, next to each other, that you can have constant access because there's so much there.
Yeah, I can back that up. The first time I went war driving, I drove through the Bronx, then I drove into Manhattan, then I drove down Central Park West, which is obviously the west side of Central Park, when the people around there have lots and lots and lots of money, and I can't even tell you, we recorded hundreds and hundreds of access points. It got to the point where it was just boring. We had no interest to even do it anymore. But you can get internet access there. At least when we did it, you could get it anywhere you wanted. And even when we were on the West Side Highway, pretty far away from the buildings, we were driving 80 miles an hour, and we were hitting an occasional access point here and there, too. So, no, it's everywhere. Anywhere in Manhattan.
Right. And you know, in a place like Manhattan, there's, or you know, any big city, there's all the buildings, all the companies, all these things that you, the canopy is a very real possibility. In more rural areas, you don't have the buildings and the businesses so close together, so that's where the gaps in the canopy come in. So you can't have a continuous canopy over the entire United States or Earth or whatever you want to imagine.
Right.
However, this technology, still not the complete answer, but this is helpful. And the reason is because you can start taking this further and further away from buildings, away from places, by stretching and running that Cat 5 wherever you want to. You know, you can run this, you used to have one in your house, now you could run it out to the edge of your driveway or something for, I don't know what reason you would want to. You know, you could maybe hook up with a neighbor and put your access point in between your houses and get enough coverage because you now have the flexibility with the power over the Ethernet to put it in a central, put it in a box or out in the, you know, in the power shed or your phone shed or something like that. Or you can actually cover two houses with one device now. So you're actually spreading the ability and the reach of these things because of this. And then, on top of that, you start putting in things like transmitters, antennas, to help even spread that even further. You know, you get to the point where we don't even need cantennas. We don't even need to really work to find a signal. It's the signals are growing and spreading so much that they're finding us. And that is a very cool thing. Not only from a hacking standpoint, yeah, that's kind of handy for us and that's cool and all, but like I said, we already had that. It's already so commonplace. Like you said, you got bored with it sometimes.
Yeah.
If I ever want it or need it, it's already there. I don't have to look real hard. But the simple fact of a wireless world, you know, we're moving in that direction. Yep. Is it complete? Is it, you know, absolute? No, it's still theoretical, but we're making progress towards it. I think that's a cool thing. Progress, I like progress in general. Progress is a very good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the cool applications that some people might not be aware of is that with a PDA and a piece of software called, I think it's called X-Lite, it's a phone application. You can use Free World Dial-Up, which is basically like a voice over IP only phone system. You can use your PDA as a phone and call other people who have Free World Dial-Up phones. So it's kind of like a ghetto cell phone network at this point. It's pretty cool.
Quality?
The quality is not so bad. It all depends on how much bandwidth you have, but it's pretty decent on a regular DSL connection.
Interesting. Very interesting. Little wireless ghetto voice over IP.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. I really like it.
All right. Well, I think that's probably a good ending message. Progress is a good thing. Good things are happening finally.
Wow, the show's over already, huh?
Yeah, it's been, I think we're actually over. I lost track of time, actually. I think we're probably right at, probably a little over an hour already. So, I have one shout-out. So, like I said, I had my 2600 meeting earlier. My shout-out is to all the hot chicks who go hang out at the mall to give me something to look at while I'm at my 2600 meeting. That's my shout-out. You keep doing that. Hot chicks... very good thing.
All right, I got a bunch of shouts, but
all right, but go to it.
Definitely shouts to the hostess at the diner I went to tonight. God damn, she is smoking. Let me think. And then other than that, I got shouts to Decoder, Lucky 225, Doug, Raja 5, and Royal from the show.
I'm hopefully going to listen to, that's episode 3, that was the long 2 hours you said?
Yeah, the 2 hours.
I'm hopefully
going
to listen to that at work tomorrow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Definitely worth listening. But those guys on the show, they know the shit, so check it out whenever you can. And shouts to Motorola and Nextel and on making the whole GPS setup for me. And that's about it for me.
All right. Well, let me remind our listeners... did I change the email address? I mentioned it at the top of the show. Let me remind you to close it out. We now, any feedback about Binary Revolution Radio, do not send it to letters at binrev.com. Send it to radio@binrev.com. Letters at binrev.com still works. It's going to be mostly for the magazine now. But I will, of course, be checking them both because I know people are listening to past episodes and may send it to the old address. And that's it. Our closing music tonight is from Sex, that's C-E-X, and it's called My Head. Boy, that's a great combination of title and artist name, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that is going to wrap it up. So, we will see you next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Peace out.
Later.
Spine is bending. I've listened all my life and you haven't told me anything. Where's the embarrassment?